Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. This is a bit of a crazy time with everything going on with COVID. We are in late March here as I'm creating this podcast. And of course, it was an opportunistic time to cover the drug hydroxychloroquine. So I'm certainly going to do that. First, I want to remind you, definitely go leave us a rating review on iTunes if you enjoy the podcast today. Also, go back, check our previous episodes, and you can also sign up for a free 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. Great little study guide for pharmacists, pharmacy students, med students, folks who have to take pharmacology classes. So go check out those resources at reallifepharmacology.com. So getting into the drug today, hydroxychloroquine, brand name is Plaquenil. This is a drug that has been around for a long time. In my practice, again, I focus primarily in geriatrics. I have definitely seen this medication used primarily for rheumatoid arthritis on a chronic long-term basis. It's the most common indication I've definitely seen this used for. It does have anti-malarial activity. I believe that's what it was originally designed for, was for that. And then I think it was found subsequently to help out in rheumatoid arthritis. It also, probably the major indication I've seen it used for other than RA on a chronic basis is lupus as well. So those are the big two that I have seen in my practice. Now, thinking about this medication and the mechanism of action, it isn't completely understood how this drug works, but we do know that it's got some immune system modulating effects, and the way it interferes with the antibody antigen type reactions. So if you remember rheumatoid arthritis, this is basically a disease state where antibodies can bind to the lining of the joints, and ultimately, the immune system attacks itself and attacks that lining and causes damage and inflammation and pain. That's essentially what RA is. So hydroxychloroquine can suppress or kind of reduce that effect by interfering with that. The exact mechanism and the details of that, I'm not going to go into that, or the proposed mechanism of how that works. But this is also a potential risk with COVID infection, is basically the immune system getting a little bit of an overreaction to the virus and attacking lung tissues. At least that's been reported at this time. Again, information is changing so fast in this COVID situation. So definitely, if you're a healthcare professional out there, you've got to do your work, you've got to do the research, and look at these new articles that are coming out day after day. So at this point, there was a small trial saying hydroxychloroquine was a little bit more beneficial. So definitely go check that out. I did a recent blog post as well over on meded101.com. You can find the link there as well. So with that, again, kind of that immune system modulating effects, that's one of the theories postulated as to why it may have effects in helping blunt a severe case of COVID infection and the complications that go along with it. Let's slide into adverse effects, because this is going to be important if anyone is considering prescribing this medication in COVID or in rheumatoid arthritis or lupus or whatever else we're using it for. So adverse effect profile. The number one thing that I've seen on pharmacology exams throughout my pharmacy career is the risk for retinopathy. And generally, this is a long-term, higher-dose chronic issue. The likelihood that this presents in a short-term situation is probably pretty low, okay? Same thing with some of the blood disorders that can happen with hydroxychloroquine. We can cause thrombocytopenia. As you can imagine, if we're modulating the immune system or immune response potentially, we could have some alterations in lowering white blood cell count and things of that nature as well. Again, probably more likely on a chronic long-term basis that this is going to be an issue. But keep in mind that it is something to keep an eye out for. Liver function tests, monitoring those. There have been some issues, some reports of liver issues. Rarely myopathy can happen as well. So some abnormal muscle pain and soreness. Acutely in the short term, obviously any medication can cause some GI upset. I would say it's not crazy common with hydroxychloroquine, but something to keep in mind. QTC prolongation has been reported, and in that little study on COVID I mentioned, it was used with azithromycin in a few people. Azithromycin, probably not a huge factor in QTC prolongation, but there are case reports of that as well. So if you've got a patient at really high risk for QTC prolongation, maybe they've got pre-existing issues, maybe they've got electrolyte abnormalities, maybe they're on other drugs like amiodarone and quinolone antibiotics or antipsychotics. Citalopram is another good example there. If we've got some risk factors for QTC prolongation, I would say that is something to consider and give you pause and really look at the situation clinically and make sure that we're not putting a patient at risk for that, at added risk for that by adding hydroxychloroquine. Now, in patients with, maybe younger and not many risk factors, it's probably not going to be an issue, or it's very unlikely that it would be an issue. Also, acutely, pretty rare, but there have been reports of skin type reactions, so rashes and things of that nature. So that's something certainly we can usually pick up on right away if we know that hydroxychloroquine was one of the only drugs recently started. We can certainly tell that that's probably a likely culprit if the timing correlates well there. Kinetics, I do want to speak to this a little bit, particularly in rheumatoid arthritis. That onset of action, onset of benefit, takes weeks, okay? In RA, we often use acute short-term therapy like steroids or NSAIDs to manage an RA flare and the pain and inflammation associated with that. Hydroxychloroquine is not meant to do that. It is classified as a DMARD, which essentially means that it's a disease-modifying agent and it takes time to work. So good patient education point there. So patients don't get their hopes up like, yeah, this is going to, cure me within a few days or something. Let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and then we'll get into it with drug interactions. So if you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material, such as NAPLEX, BCPS, ambulatory care, MTM certification, our geriatric certification, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. For other clinicians, we definitely have a lot of content. A recent book on drug interactions that is available as an audiobook. I've got a link on meded101.com/store where you can find all our audiobooks, and you can get your first one for free on Audible. So, for instance, my drug interaction book recently, it's a 10-hour plus book covering some of the most common drugs encountered in primary care. And I discuss a lot about how I would manage, assess different drug interactions. So a very unique resource that not too many exist out there on drug interactions. So again, go support the sponsor, meded101.com/store. See what we all have available there with our growing list of resources. So let's talk drug interactions. When I think of hydroxychloroquine, I don't think of a ton of drug interactions. So it's not notorious like fluvoxamine or St. John's wort or carbamazepine for drug interactions. First thing I would think about, I mentioned that QTC prolongation risk, looking at other drugs in their medication profile and saying, hey, you know, this is a patient that is on a bunch of meds that can prolong the QTC interval, like antipsychotics or citalopram or macrolides or amiodarone. So it's important to take a peek at that as far as drug interactions go. There is one with digoxin and some of the beta blockers where it could potentially increase concentrations of those drugs. So keeping an eye on cardiac status, you know, monitoring pulse, something like that, just to make sure that, that we're not getting too much of some of those drugs there. Blood sugars, so probably not incredibly common, but if you've got a patient on insulin, sulfonylureas, where we're adding insulin, that risk for hypoglycemia could go up a little bit with addition of hydroxychloroquine, or at least there has been some reports of that. I wouldn't put it crazy high on my radar, but if you notice that hydroxychloroquine started and patients are experiencing more and more hypoglycemia, that is certainly something to consider. Remember that eye toxicity, kind of very unique adverse effect. There is also potential for tamoxifen to add on to that effect. So again, with drug interactions, not a crazy, crazy list of drug interactions. You know, it doesn't significantly impact the CYP pathway or the CYP pathways. So from a drug interaction perspective, hydroxychloroquine would probably be on the low to moderate end of causing problems there. One last point on COVID that I wanted to make, especially reaching out to any pharmacists, pharmacy students listening, really stay up to date on guidelines, recommendations that are coming out. They're absolutely going to be changing over time as we get more evidence. So make sure prescribing is appropriate. Clinicians may not be up to date. They may be inappropriately prescribing. Definitely keep tabs on that. And, you know, the reason why it's so important is because shortages, supply issues, I've already seen and heard of issues coming up with hydroxychloroquine supply. So we really need to preserve the drug if it is going to be effective and we continue to get evidence showing that it may help. We really need to preserve that drug for this, you know, moderate to severe cases. We can't be giving it to patients that are going to recover easily without any issues, and they, you know, don't have many symptoms. So very, very important, I think, to pay attention to the literature and help ensure that we're working with all our colleagues to make sure that prescribing is appropriate, and we're getting this drug to those critical patients that may need it, again, if we're seeing that benefit in the literature there. So I think that's going to wrap it up for today. If you enjoyed the podcast, found it helpful, definitely leave us a rating, quick review saying you liked it, hopefully, on iTunes or wherever you're listening. It's greatly appreciated for those of you that do. Go sign up, reallifepharmacology.com. You'll get emails for when we've got a new podcast episode available. Also, once subscribed, you'll instantly get that PDF, 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs and really important clinical pearls that go with each of those drugs. Really unique resource for any student that has to take pharmacology. So I'm going to sign off for today. Thanks so much for listening. Stay safe out there. Take care of yourself. and do the best we can to try to mitigate, limit this COVID infection. And hopefully we'll get through it. And a big thank you to all the healthcare workers out there on the front lines. Your job certainly is not easy at this time. So take care. Thanks for listening.